I calculated it at 513 days, but the general consensus and me checking on the computer shows it was 511 days since we had that 1-1 draw against Fulham. Does seem a long time ago, but 8,500 people turned up this afternoon in the bright sunshine. No South Stand, because it's still being used as a jabbing zone, I believe. I'm guessing that's going to end. Joining me is Ian. We're going to chat through the action. We got a good little audience in this evening, which includes Matt of Three Peeps. So welcome, Matt, and everybody else that's in there. Tried to give you a name check as well. Make your comments as we go along, and we'll do the necessary. What we're going to do, I think, is rather than just do a sort of like we've done in all through last season with a little resume of the game, I'm going to start with a little resume of the game from you, Ian. What are your thoughts? Just 30 seconds.
30 seconds. I thought Villa never really needed to get out of third gear to beat us. Three poor goals from a defensive standpoint. And if we'd have been playing now, I don't think we'd have scored. On the positives for me, Scott made a great appearance, unlucky not to get a penalty, and did more probably in the first 5 minutes of the second half than the others had done in the first 45. So for me, poor defensively to let in the three goals, some bright spots, but if I'm being brutally honest, more of the same, and I don't know where the goals are coming from.
Interesting you make that point. I don't know if you've listened to the Nigel Pearson interview after the game. I mean, he seemed reasonably positive. He said it was the game that was lost in both penalties, as you rightly pointed out. Three sloppy goals. He said they were sloppy, and then a lack of incisiveness up front. He still views them as training sessions. And as you say, Villa didn't get out of third gear. They did look a little bit sharper than us. But the starting lineup, Ian, Bentz, Viner, Baker, Atkinson, De Silva, it looked like a 4-2-3-1 maybe. James and King and holding players, Wyman, Palmer, O'Dowda and Martin. I mean, with the exception of Wyman in that front four, the rest of the front leaves me a bit cold. But do you think that lineup is likely to feature against Blackpool, or do you think there were sufficient other performances that nothing's in tablets of stone?
I don't. First of all, I don't think it's a 4-2-3-1. I just don't see it. I was down at Plymouth as well, and for me, it's a either a 4-4-1-1. Or a 4-4-2, because Palmer plays up with Martin, not very effectively, or just behind him. I don't like it, I've got to be honest. I think if I looked at that, if I was going to play that formation, I personally wouldn't. I think we need, if we're going to play, try and score goals, we need Wells and Martin in the side. And they need to play together as they did at the start of last season. When, let's not forget, with everything that was said and done, we did win the first five games. So we need... I bring Kalas in at the back. I'd bring probably Adam Nash or Masengo, if he's fit, in with James in the midfield. And if you're going to play three behind... Chris Martin and leave Naki out, then I think you'd have to play Alex Scott in the middle and Callum O'Dowd on the left and Andy Wyman on the right, if you're going to play that 4-2-3-1. But the biggest thing for me would be get Kalas in at the back. I think you'd be more dominant, and you've got a right and a left side instead of two lefties.
Yeah, I mean, Kalas didn't start, Matt. Wivs has said, what are our thoughts on Kalas not starting? As Red Robin has said, maybe too soon. Too soon for what? I mean, we played, our back four had three left footers in there, which is quite unusual. But should we read anything into Kalas not starting? Because he didn't even get a kick. He didn't even come on for the second half, did he?
No, I think if he's not ready, then something's wrong. Because he played 90 minutes against Exeter under 23s or whatever that team was. They put out against us the other day, so I think he could do it. I mean, if he could only do 70 minutes, get him out there, get 3-0 up, and then, you know, Atkinson can come on and play extra centre back then. But as I say, my own view is I'd go with the three of them because I think it makes, you can have three solid players in midfield. You can have one solid in two more attacking players in midfield. And if you've got three at the back, you've got a lot of height to defend set pieces. And in both penalty areas last year, we were fairly lousy. And I thought the same applied today. I think Kalas will probably be the one that goes to fund the purchase of the centre forward.
That so we need.
My view is I'd be very surprised. My understanding is there is an interest from Brighton because obviously Ben.
Because they've sold Ben White, yeah.
They've got 50 million quid. I think Kalas, particularly as he's played with Adam Webster before, could be a guy that they look at, and his performance in the Euros, where I thought he was very
good.
What
sort of money do you think, in a depressed market, what sort of money do you think they get for Kalas?
Well, having just got 50 million, you'd probably be looking, my guess would be somewhere between 8 and 12. Would be my guess, perhaps a little bit more. Depends how badly they want him and who else is available. But I would say, I mean, we paid 8 for him.
If we got our money back and for amortisation, it's straight in the bank. And if he goes, does that raise the level of person that we're looking for to replace, not to replace him, does that raise the level of person that we're in the market for up front?
Well, possibly. I mean, the word for a long while had been the one that you want to see is Michael Smith, who I personally would like to see a sign. I would have liked to see a sign Matt Crooks as well to have some power and some strength in midfield. But leaving that one aside, I think if you go for Smith, it may leave some money over if he wants to go and buy another replacement centre-back. Because Robbie Cundy isn't going to be available, I wouldn't have thought, until September. I haven't seen him in the gym yesterday. And then all that would leave, if Kalas goes as a right-sided centre-back, would be Taylor Moore. Or you can play Danny Simpson right-back and switch Zach Viner in one. But I thought both our full-backs did well today, Viner and De Silva. Yeah. And I thought Danny Simpson didn't look great when he came on after not being horrible, but I just don't think he was up with the game. And it wasn't a coincidence that their third goal, Atkinson played the wide lad onside. He got in behind Simpson by 8 yards. And you can't give a fella like that kind of start. No. And then, a beautiful cross and simple header to finish within the box.
Yeah, we'll look at the first two goals in a moment. Just going back to lineups and people not around. Joe Williams, might have been useful to have him on the bench just to give him 25 minutes as part of his rehab, but not in the squad. What should we read in? Well, not what should we read. What do you make of that? I would have thought 25 minutes, he could have had a run out as part of his getting back to fitness. You still there, Ian?
Yes, I am.
He
played 60 minutes against Exeter, and 60 minutes seems to be what Pearson wants to play him for at the moment, and I think he's only going to be on one game a week. So what I would think may happen, if he's not on the bench for the Blackpool game, because if you're playing a 4-2-3-1, I think Joe Williams is the guy that comes in place next to Matty James.
Yeah.
But if you're playing a 4-2-3-1, I think the game you could see him start at would be the Forest Green Carabao Cup, because we're in a position with the squad at the moment to make 11 changes to that game from the Blackpool game. Interesting as well that last night Taylor Moore played for the under-23s up at Ungersford, and Lewis Britton scored.
That's right.
And we won 1-0. So it was interesting that he thought it was probably better to give Taylor Moore 90 minutes up there than have him on the bench.
Yeah.
Ashton Glen.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say about Massengo, but Matt pointed out on the text that Pearson said to Gregor that Matt and Joe Williams are either available next weekend or for the Caribou Cup game against Forest Green, which follows. You've already spoken about the third goal here, but let's look at the first two. Yes, you're right. Viner did have a good game. Yeah, one of the better performances in the first half. But he was caught a bit by a good ball that found Ollie Watkins, who became provider. So, sloppy goal or just first a Premier League class telling in the final third?
I think probably a little bit of both. I mean, you're not going to come up against somebody like Ollie Watkins, who does tend to pull out to the left and then come in. And I mean, let's be honest, the kid's a class player. So it's no shame getting done by him. But I don't think Bentley had a great game today.
Well, I was going to say, coming on to the second goal, he spilled it, didn't he?
Yeah, it was just a straightforward chip down the middle of the box. I mean, there was nothing magical about the free kick. But once again, I didn't think, having said that, and we may discuss the Plymouth game as well in the round. Plymouth, I mean, Bentley made four absolutely top class saves down at Plymouth, otherwise we could have very easily lost that game.
Yeah. So going in at half time, 2-0 down, they could have had a third, couldn't they? Because it was a cracking free kick against the bar. Do you think one or two of the youngsters they had out there, one or two youngsters were trying to impress in view of the fact that Grealish is on his way to Man City? Anybody stand out for Villa for you in that opening half other than Watkins?
I've got to be honest, not really. I thought their team all over looked to have way too much class and way too much time. If you see towards the end where they were playing 1-2s, and at one point one of their players was dribbling the ball in the 6-yard box, their own 6-yard box. Now that is absolutely taking a mickey, isn't it?
Showboating, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, obviously Watkins, I don't know, I mean, what did they pay for him? Thick end of 30 million?
35,
Then they got Buendia, same kind of money. They're trying to sign. I was chatting to some Villa fans in a coffee shop before the game, and I said to them, if he comes on, keep an eye out for Alex Scott, because we fancy he could be a little bit of a Jack Grealish, because he plays a bit like him in Lowe.
He does.
On he came, and he looked different from anything else that we've got at the club. He looked like he might create something. He might force a penalty. He likes to run with the ball. He draws free kicks. As I said, quite similar to a young version of Jack Grealish.
Yeah.
So what we've got to do, if we're going to play this one in behind two strikers, or one in behind one striker, I think it has to be Alex Scott. You have to try and get him into the side. I don't think you can get him into a two-man central midfield.
But oh, God, no. He's not got enough physicality to do that, has he, really?
No, but he's putting a couple of decent tackles as well. I mean, he's not just, if you want to call it, sometimes they used to call Grealish a bit of a pretty boy, didn't they? He's not just a skillful player. I mean, he put in a couple of really strong tackles while he was out there as well. So he's like a lot of lads that come through the academy. There's no chickens come through there. They'll all put their foot in.
And he is without doubt the best of the bunch, isn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like Zach Bell as well. I think he's got
Sam Bell. He's
got good pace. Sorry, Sam Bell.
Sam Bell. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got two good feet, and I think he knows where the net is, and he created a little bit of mayhem. He's got a yard of pace as well, which is always handy. Yeah, I think first thing, we have to get into a shape that gets the best out of every player, out of the players that we've got available. It's all very well saying, well, everybody plays a 4-2-3-1, and look how well England did playing it, but we haven't got the same players. So I'd really like to see a system that makes us look, that gives us an identity, because I genuinely don't know what our identity is. I honestly don't know what we are as a team. because we're not a defensive.
You mean side, we don't play? You mean we don't play? We don't play like a Brentford did, or a Fulham did, or even, dare I say, a Neil Warnock Cardiff side, or a Swansea side of 10 years ago? You don't come out and you think we're going to play this way. That's what you're saying,
exactly.
Isn't it, really,
exactly. Yeah, we're not a footballing team. We're not a we're not a big defensive side. So if you took analogy of the Premiership, we're not a Burnley. We're not a Man City. So what are we? I'm not seeing that identity at the moment. I think there are some things about today that you'd say, well, yeah, that was reasonably good. There were some bright spots. But overall, I thought the performance and Villa, I mean, that Villa side's a much, much better team than Blackpool be next week.
Yeah.
Blackpool will want to be in top gear. They've just been promoted.
Yeah.
They'll want to be in top gear from minute one. Now, that Villa team didn't want to. And I mean, when you look at it and you think, well, why do we need a presence up front? I mean, in the second half, we were playing the ball forward in the air sometimes. And the guy that was marking Naki Wells was a foot taller than he was.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what chance has he got if he hasn't got somebody to play off? And I think Pearson realises that, but at the moment...
And that's why he needs to go out and spin. Yeah, I mean, we had two wide players. Well, let's talk about Palmer, because I think Graham C. noted when I said Scott should start next week. He said, what, ahead of Palmer? Palmer did nothing wrong in the first half. You know, it's Scott or Palmer, isn't it? Yeah,
but it's not about, with respect to everybody, it's not about doing nothing wrong. It's about doing something right. And doing something right for a player in that position is an assist or a goal.
Yeah.
All right, we're talking about number 10 all season and you don't get any goals and assists, what are you in the team for?
True.
We've got too many players who don't get enough goals and assists. And unless you've got those players, and that's why I don't think we can afford to leave Naki Wells out of the team, because he's the only guy that we've got who's likely to score a goal.
Yeah.
And if you said, could any of your players get 20 goals in a season, I'd say, well, it's very unlikely, but if anybody could do it, it would be Naki Wells, because he does know where the back of the net is.
Well, no, you're right. And based on their history, you know, Andy Vyman's probably good for 10 to 15 absolute max. I doubt if he's ever scored 15 in his career. And Chris Martin, whose better days are behind him, he's probably good for 8 to 12. Yeah, and that's it. I mean, look, the enigma that is Callum O'Dowda, I just checked on Wikipedia. This is season 6 for him, right? And he showed some good touches today. But this is typical Callum O'Dowda. He flits in and out the game. Where were the crosses for Martin? You know, and Andy Vyman, great to have a lot of pace down the right. Yeah, and you know what you're going to get with Vyman. But Callum O'Dowda, there's nobody challenging him for that left wing in the conventional sense place, is there?
Well, there's another player that everybody seems to have forgotten about, who I haven't seen in the training videos or in any of the teams, and that's O'War Edwards. So I don't know where he is, because he's... I mean, people say we haven't got any wide players. We've got loads of wide players. You've also...
Well, Janna. So we forgot about Janna, didn't we? Soku Janna. Yeah.
You've got Soku Janna, who can play left or right. And you've got Owori, who can play left. He's basically left, but he can play left or right. And you've got Sam Pearson, who can play right. So we've got plenty of players who can play there. I'm just looking at... But when you've got wide players in the side, you need midfielders who can give them the ball in key areas.
What about having, and this is a bit not outrageous, but creativity, what about Scott playing in that left wing position? Because you've got the pace with Vyman on the one side, you could have Scott and Palmer. And don't tell me that you're losing, you know, because if you've got James and King, or James and Williams, Palmer and Scott, and Vyman bombing down the right with Naki Wells in the middle, that to me has got a little bit of everything in there. Because Scott can pick a pass, can't he?
Yeah, but you'd have to play a lot more football than we do because you've in that team, or what you just said, you've got no physical presence up front. And
well, you've got no physical presence because I've said put Naki Wells in for Chris Martin. Yeah, so it's lightweight in that context. No, I have to agree with you. If you're
Manchester City, you can have a 5'6", 5'8" centre forward. Right, because you've got class and quality around him, and you're not firing the ball forward in the air. But we're not that good, and sooner or later we'll be playing the ball in, and it'll go into the box in the air, or we won't play through like Man City do. So you're better off having a what I would say. Let's say that we went and got Smith from Rotherham. He'd be Robbie Turner, and Naki Wells would be Bob Taylor. And that worked well, but they also had good service from wide areas, and they also had two midfield players who could give the wide players the ball, so they could create. Yeah. And that is something that I think if we had James a fully fit Joe Williams and Matty James as a two in midfield, then you could give them the ball, and okay, it might make you a 4-2 team instead of a 1-0 team, but at the moment we're as I say, we lack an identity. I don't see what we've got and what we are. And I saw us at Plymouth, and we looked all right in parts of the game, first 15 minutes of the first half, probably the first 15 minutes of the second half. But as I said, Bentley had far too much to do, and today he let in three goals, and it's. Well, the two better teams that we played, so Celtic up at the HPC and Villa today.
Villa, sorry.
We haven't looked like scoring a goal.
No, I mean we had a couple of near things. What did you think of the referee today? Is it Friend, the Premier League ref? Because he didn't give us anything. I thought we had, not when Scott was brought down, but there was another one, I think, when Martin was brought down. That looked a nailed on pen, didn't it? And then they went up the other end and scored and made it 3-0 when it could have been 2-1 if we'd have scored with the penalty kick. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought the closest one to a penalty is when Scott got brought down at the start of the second half, when he made the run into the box. Not the first one, the second one.
All right, okay.
But I mean, the Martin one could have been. He could have been clipped when he went in there. I honestly, from where I appealed for a penalty, same as the rest of the fans. But I couldn't honestly say where it was or it wasn't without the benefit of a replay.
Yeah. So if we look at individual player performances, and I'm looking at what Gregor's said on here, he's given the marks and what have you. So let's look at what he said, and I thought he was bang on with some and a little bit harsh on other. He's given Dan Bentley a 5, Ian. Not many shots to save, but spilled that goal. Would you agree with that? Dan Bentley a 5, yeah?
Yeah.
Zach Viner a 7. It says a magnificent display down the right, apart from Watkins drifting over. Just 7, I'd have thought maybe a 6. What do you think?
No, I'd have given Zach a 7 for his overall game.
All right, Nathan Baker's got a 5. I thought he did okay. He looked fit. He looked, you know, very mobile. I thought maybe he was worth a 6, certainly because he's given Rob Atkinson a 6. So I don't think Baker was one mark down on Atkinson.
I'd have gone the other way around. And the reason I'd have marked Atkinson down is he was, you know, if you look at all the videos of him playing for Oxford, he was a touch of the Adam Webster's bringing the ball out from the back. And I think he found out today there's one thing doing that in League One, and it's something entirely different doing it against quality opposition, because he just fell over, lost the ball, and they took the ball off him and went on the attack. So I'd give him a 5, and I'd give Baker a 6 the basis that we let in three goals, and they were all as a result of issues we had not marking people in the middle.
Yeah. Jay De Silva, he's got a 6. He's a talented footballer. There's no doubt about that. Does he get forward enough for you, Ian? I mean, this is his third season here. He's missed the majority of his career at City with effectively those shin splint injuries. Gregor's given him a six. But do you agree with that? And do you think we need more physicality, which we got when Cameron Pring came on?
Yeah, no, I'd give him a seven. And the reason he doesn't get forward enough is because we don't dominate possession enough. So if he goes bombing forward, the ball's just going to get, we're going to lose the ball and it'll just get played into where he should be. Which is another reason I'd play three central defenders. So that he could bomb forward as a wing back as opposed to a full back. But Pearson likes a flat back four, so I think that's probably the end of it. But no, I'd give him a seven. I thought he had a good game.
He was all right. And so him and Viner played well. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think the fullbacks were far better than the centre-backs, and it's not often you say that about Bristol City.
No, true. Two midfielders. He's given Matty James a seven, Andy King a five. I mean, Andy King's 34. You said to me when you were driving home, you thought Andy King, you expected a bit more for a man of his experience, and he's been interviewed after the game saying how great it was playing with the shirt of Bristol City on the club that he supported as a boy. A seven and a five, is that a fair comparison, would you say, there?
Yeah, see, that's exactly the marks I'd have given.
Yeah, Andy Vyman a six.
Mm-hmm.
Overall, yeah. Casey is seven. I think it's it. This is where I think he's gone a bit awry here, as Gregor. He's given Casey Palmer a seven. Well, based on the first 20 minutes, maybe. Callum O'Dowd a seven? Dear, oh dear.
No.
Chris Martin, no, six.
I'd have given Martin a six. I would have given O'Dowd a six. And I'd have probably given Casey Palmer a five. Because
there we go.
He doesn't. It, like I said earlier on, I don't want to keep on about it. If you were an attacking midfield player, at the end of the game, month, season, whatever, I want to see a good record for goals and assists. Right?
Yeah.
Where, all the other stuff, I mean, you're a, I mean, Palmer, I think, is a bit like Naki, a bit of a liability in defence. I mean to say that he doesn't try and tackle anybody or anything like that. He's just not very good at it technically. And he'll give away free kicks. So
yeah,
I'd without you look at the player and say, right, did he? Yeah, I think he had one shot on target that, frankly, I could have saved, and he had, and that was it, no assists. So what did he actually do? I mean, he didn't. There wasn't an opportunity for him getting brought down for penalties. A bit like Scott. Scott made some runs and got into the box. I don't think he did that. Possibly. I'd be in a bit. I'd possibly give Palmer a six, but I don't think. I just don't think he did much. And you could say the same down at Plymouth.
Yeah, there we go. Which has been the feature of his career here, and probably his career throughout his time in football, not fulfilled the promise. Substitutes who were on enough to get a mark. Alex Scott a seven. I mean, he was the bright spark of the day. If you're going to give somebody a man of the match, well, probably a bit generous giving him an eight, but a seven and a half. He looks good, right? He's a player that, you know, as people have been saying on OTIP, he ain't going to be here this time next year. If he plays more than 25 matches for us and gets the visibility, he's going to be off. That's the next big money signing going out of Ashton Gate. Danny Simpson, you didn't think was great. Gregor's giving him a five for the 35 minutes that he was on. And Sam Bell, he's given him a six, which I thought was fair because Sam Bell, Mickey's son, I thought he did okay, and he's given Naki a six as well. I think we had a couple of decent free kicks, but didn't really threaten their keeper, did we?
Well, I thought our free kicks were pretty poor. All our set pieces, to be honest, we didn't look like scoring or creating anything from a set piece. And we've got to come up with something better than, you know, Naki having a shot from the edge of the box and hitting the wall or kicking it wide or whatever. I think it's come off once up at Millwall and got a big deflection. But I'd like to see us be more imaginative and more clever with our set pieces. And by that, I mean corners and free kicks. You know, I don't see any, for the amount of time they spend on the training ground, I don't see a great deal of ingenuity in what we do.
No, you know? I mean, I noticed Scott came short for, I think it was probably our only corner in the second half when I think De Silva took it Scott came short and he had the space, and I'd much sooner played, I think it was De Silva, played it into Scott and let him try and do something a bit special. Finally, the final subs that did have a mark, Adam Nash, I thought he swept up well, and I thought it allowed James a little bit more freedom when Nash came on. Would you agree with that, Ian?
Yeah, I'd have. I mean, if we're going to go with this 4-2-3-1, if Joe Williams isn't available, I'd have Nash in next to James and leave Andy King on the bench, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. And then Tyreek and Cameron came on. They were only on for about 10 minutes apiece. All I remember of Tyreek, who's done well, I think, in a couple of the preseason games, but was just a couple of really sloppy passes, not in dangerous positions either end of the field, but just giving the ball away. And I did think Cameron Pring, he did give the ball away once, but I do think he gives us that extra bit of physicality at the back.
Yeah, if you look at it, I mean, Cameron Pring's 6'1".
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, Jada Silva's 5'6". So he's going to be a more physical specimen. And I think he's actually quicker. I mean, I watched him play for the under-23s and I watched him play in some of the friendly games. And he doesn't have to bomb on down that wing. And he'll bomb on the same in the 90th minute than he will as he will in the first minute. But if you played five defenders and Bentley that are all over 6 foot, you know, you'd have an average of the back five of 6'2", 6'3".
Yeah.
And the smallest one out the lot, strangely enough, is Callas, because Callas is only 6 foot, but he's got a hell of a jump on him.
Yeah.
So which makes up for it. And he's also a very good defender. Now, I don't know who'd be the organiser out of that lot, because when the lad from Fulham played for us, who was on loan, the other one who gets in, Alfie Mawson.
Yeah.
When he played, he was the organiser out there and got everybody moving in a line or coming up or whatever. So I don't know who the organiser would be, but at least it gives you that the option that you can make a mistake and you've got that physicality to make up for it. But I still think we're lacking... We're definitely lacking a physical presence up front.
You talk about physicality, and as I say, the only one that we have at the moment is Chris Martin. But what about Louis Britton? Yeah, I mean, he played for the under-23s. You know, I think how old is Louis? Is he about 21? Yeah, he's 4 years older than. Is he 4 years older than Alex Scott? Yeah, he's a unit, isn't he?
Yeah, he's...
If Callas doesn't go and we can't buy anybody, there's no money, so we don't get it, would you put Louis Britton on the bench? And when he's fit, that physicality, is that something that Semenyo can offer? I mean, that's pretty spicy, that is, if you've got Vyman and Semenyo sort of featuring with Naki up front and then the two holding midfielders and Scott playing on the left. I hope I haven't got one extra player in there somewhere, but do you think Semenyo or Britton could offer that solution of physicality that Chris Martin by himself just doesn't?
Louis Britton, I mean, 6'2", he likes a tackle. He's got that physical presence. He knows where the back of the net is. He scores goals. I think there's two things at the moment that puzzle me a little bit. One is, why hasn't he signed the new contract? Because all the others have. They've all signed 3-year extensions, but he hasn't. And I don't know if Pearson's holding him back because of that. I know he was injured. But now he's fine. He's played two games for the under-23s. And he's got that physical presence. So, yeah, he would absolutely 100% be on the bench for me for the first game. Because if you're chased for any reason, let's say you start off with this 4-2-3-1 and Martin is your one, and Martin gets a knock and has to go off, who are you going to bring on and play up front? If you bring Naki on... Like I said, nothing against the bloke, but he needs the bigger guy to play next to. And Lewis Britton should be ideal to do that, because he's the bloke that gets the flick on to knock down. He can hold the ball up back to goal, and he's got a reasonable turn of speed for a big guy. He knows where the net is, and he's strong. So I've got nothing against, but I don't. It seems to me that Pearson has got Bell and Conway, even Janna, who I don't think he's a centre forward. I think he's a big, strong winger, a little bit like in the same mould as Semenyo. So when he's playing wide, he's got that strength, that power, and his speed. And I think what those two need to add to their game is goals. It's as simple as that. I mean, Semenyo got a few assists last season, but the only goals he got, fair play to him, were the charge downs.
Yeah. No, they were two very similar goals. I mean, look, this is what I would. Yeah. This is right. So keep it relatively short one today. And before I say what I think the lineup should be next week, one thing that was markedly different Ashton Gate or at the club, the demise of the paper program, Ian. I mean, I'll be honest, I got a program when I was doing corporate last season. Very rarely read them. It's online now. Sign of the times, no more paper programs. Yeah. What did you think of that, if anything?
Well, I think most people these days have got a smartphone. I think from a historic point of view, it's a little bit sad. But if they were selling loads of them, I suppose it wouldn't have had a demise. So I think most people these days have got a smartphone. You can get down there, call up Twitter, you can see the side, you can see the subs. After the game, you can log on to a site and pick up shots on target and one thing and another. So really, and obviously the minute the program's printed, it's out of date.
Of course it is, yeah.
So I think, you know, years ago when we didn't have all these fangled gadgets, it's become a bit of a thing of the past. So it's a shame, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. I have my collection. I gave them to Never to the Dark Side, actually, about 2 years ago now. And a number of times I can remember over the last 3 years where somebody would feature on the front and they wouldn't even make it in the match day squad. But as you say, out of date. Right, this is what I would like to see lining up against Blackpool next week. I don't think it's controversial. I don't think it'll happen because I'm not the manager. But this would be my starting 11, right, with Benson goal, Viner, Callas, Baker, De Silva, James and Naj in the middle as holders, Vyman offering pace on the right, Scott offering ingenuity, bit of heading ability as well on the left, Naki Wells, Chris Martin up front. Would you change any of that, Ian? I don't think he'll do it. That, to me, that would be a good starting lineup. What do you think?
So what's your formation? Is it 4-3-3?
Well, you could say it's 4-4-2-2-2, if there is such a thing. Or 4-3-1-2. You got Wells and Martin up front. You got Vyman offering the pace. You've got Vyman offering the pace. He's not a winger, but he runs. Yeah. You've got Scott offering the creativity and the ability, maybe not to get to the byline because he's not got the pace, but he's a sort who can whip in across from 25 yards out. And you've got Naj and James, who are both fit, not King, who you said was puffing a bit down at Plymouth when you went down there. Do you see anything wrong? Who would you change in that side that I've just named there?
Well, I think if we're going with this mythical 4-2-3-1 that Nigel Pearson is said to favour, what I'd do, if you said to me, right, you can't play 3-5-2, you've got to play this one, I'd say, right, okay, well, same back five as you, Bentley in goal, Viner, Callas, Baker, De Silva. If he's anything like fit and could do 65, 70 minutes, I'd have Joe Williams in with Matty James as the two.
I'm assuming that Joe Williams isn't fit. So, no, starting, he's not ready. So let's say players that can do 90 minutes, not chopping and changing, players that are fit and could do 90, not somebody that could do 60 and then change.
We put Adam Nagy in with Matty
with James. Yeah.
And then you're three that play behind, because I mean this formation turns into 4-5-1 when you're defending. So I'd go Vyman, Scott, O'Dowda is my three from right to left, and then Chris Martin up front.
And so you would play Callum O'Dowda ahead of Naki Wells, yeah?
Yeah, I would in that position, because basically you're asking the guy to play left wing, and we know every time Naki played. Apart from the odd exception, like the second half at Swansea away, every time Naki played in that formation where he's not a striker, he didn't look good. I think you need to have people, you need to have a bit of balance in your team.
All right, but why can't you have a midfield three of Nagy, James Nagy and Scott with Wells and Martin up front, and Wyman is offering you pace. He's offering you more than Callum O'Dowda, for goodness sake.
Yeah, but either way in that side, I suppose you could play those. If you want to play, change your mind and play 4-3-3, then, I mean, you could have Nagy, James and Scott as your three midfielders, and then you could have Vyman, Martin and Wells up front. But then again, then you're playing 4-3-3. I still don't know how well that fits. I suppose you'd be relying on Jay De Silva getting forward on the left, or Scott getting wide on the left. And
now, well, I'm saying Scott hangs out on the left. Look at what Brian Tinian used to play like over all the years, Ian, right? He didn't have pace and he used to hang out on that left touchline, and he used to ping diagonal balls across to Scott Murray. Did that for four seasons probably, yeah? He didn't have the pace, and that's where he used to play.
When Brian Tinian joined us, he joined us as a wide left midfield player, or a left winger, if you want to call it that. But he was a left-sided midfield player, never had great pace. If Tins had an extra yard of pace, he'd have been playing in the Premier League all day long. Great left foot. And as he matured, if you want to call it that, like a good boy, he played more central midfield. And then we had players come in who were wingers, like, you know, your Dave Smith, your Alan Walsh, and players like that. So, I think Scott could play there. But if you've got a three in a midfield, Nagy, James and Scott is good. Or if you want to play Scott as a more forward player, you could play him behind two strikers, and you could play a 4-3-1-2.
Yeah,
which is where I think if I had to play a back four, I would probably go with that formation. So you go with a 4-4-3. Scott is your 10, so it's more of a diamond, if you will, the 4-3-1-2, and then that allows you to have two players up front. I mean, don't forget when Martin and Wells played up front at the start of last season, we won those four or five games
didn't we? We certainly did. Ian, great to chat. What did it feel like being back in the ground today? I know it wasn't full all round, but it was good away following, what have you. Did it feel? I wore a mask through the game. I could see you were sitting along a bit. I think we were, I'd say 95% of the people weren't wearing masks. But how did you feel? Did you feel safe? Did you feel great to be back? What were your thoughts?
My thoughts were, I hope all these people sitting around me have been double jabbed. I think we need to be very sensible about what we do. And when they talk about having his vaccine passport, I fully support that. I know a lot of people don't. I support the vaccine passport, so only double jab people, with the exception of the people that can't have the jab, like kids and people with medical exclusions. Get everybody double jabbed, and then I know that if I'm surrounded by people, they're 90% likely not to get the virus and not to pass it on.
Yeah.
And it's not gone, And it's not going to be gone for a while. We need to be, we still need to be careful. I suppose when you've been double jabbed, you can be a little bit more relaxed about it. But I can see the, particularly if cases increase and in any way they start to spike, and a lot of nightclubs, it's interesting, I was reading yesterday that a lot of nightclubs are insisted on vaccine passports for people to go in.
Yeah, which is mainly young people, because we're far too old to go in them. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, what are they still called, nightclubs? I don't know, but I haven't been to one for quite some time, but I wouldn't want to go. But I think, okay, you could say, well, yeah, but you're indoors. But for me, you're indoors when you're on that concourse. You're indoors if you go to the supporters club. You're indoors if you go to one of the restaurants. So
yeah,
that's indoors. The concourse is outdoors. And okay, when you get out there, you've got people sat within, I don't know what, 60
Well, they're sat, I mean, I was sat, yeah, no, I was sat there today, and me and Mel, we've both been double jabbed. We're both sitting there wearing masks. Now, in fairness, Mel was a little bit nervous about going, but she said to me driving home, she said, you know what, you know, I felt no less safe than I would do if we were having a meal up at Coat in Clifton or something like that. But it was interesting, there were two lads sat in front of us who were under 21, neither of them probably jabbed. And whilst it is out in the moving air, they were breathing out. And with the wind coming across, yeah, I was sat in close proximity to them. And I've been somebody that hasn't been wearing a mask unless I absolutely have to, but I kept it on all through the game, other than to have my coffee and my share of a Twix bar. But there we go. Ian, we haven't decided what we're going to do on match days in terms of our pod. Be interested to know what people think. Home match days, yeah? Because for you to get down after the game for 6 o'clock is not feasible. We've talked about doing a Sunday brunch type of thing, which I think has got some supporters from that, but you know, you're looking forward to the season now, I guess, as much as I am. Yeah, with optimism, cautious optimism, or ask that question just before the international break. Do you think that will define our season? How we do in the opening five games, just like last season saved us?
No, I don't think it defined us, because if last season defined us, you know, you'd have thought after those first five games, you just thought, blimey, we're going to get in the playoffs. And some of us did. And then emergency, you know, Dr. Death started taking toll down there. And we just finished up with a horrendous injury list. I've got a few wishes for this season. Number one, I hope whatever happens, that the 98% of the squad stay fully fit.
Yeah.
I think we've got pretty much a fully fit squad to start against Blackpool. There are two notable absentees, which is Cundy, who's never actually started a game for us, but we had a very good season last season. And Anton Semenya, who's had the knee op, and he won't be available until the start of September. If Joe Williams and Masengo were fit to start either of those games, then great. You can't count them as being injured. I'd like to know what's happened to O'War Edwards, because I haven't seen or heard from him.
Disappeared.
I mean, 1 minute he was in all the training videos, and then he doesn't play in any of the friendly games that we've had, you know, starting with the Exeter game and the Plymouth game and today. So, I mean, that would be nice to know that. But if we could go through the season and at any one time have our best 11 or certainly 10 of our best 11 available, that would be fantastic. I hope our business isn't all done in the transfer window, because bear in mind that goes up to the end of August, doesn't it?
It certainly does,
So something could still happen. I would say my feeling overall, and I'll probably know better as you say after the first 5 or 10 games, my feeling overall is one of trepidation. Because I haven't seen anything. I've seen all the preseason games, and I haven't seen anything yet that makes me think we'll have much of a better season. And that's just being honest.
No, that's right, and that's how you started. And that's what you said to me. You know, you haven't seen anything. I, the eternal optimist, as I said, season 55 for me, it's a hope that kills. I saw something in the second half. Okay, it was centered around one player, really, which was Alex Scott. Something in the second half that gave me a bit of hope for the future. Ian, good to talk, as always. Thanks to all the listeners. Dave. Small audience, but we didn't publicise it on OTIB. And if you are a listener to the Forever Bristol City podcast, through the week, we've got a number of season previews coming. One with Angus Scott, always a good listen. That's already up, ready to listen to. There'll be half-hour little pods. Might merge two of them together. But all being well, I'll have four of those done by maybe even five. That's a bit too many. So a number of season previews with different personalities. Everybody will know their names if we get them on. Anyway, thanks a lot for all your support, everybody, through last season and hopefully through this season as well. And sorry to see Robbins on the wire, Robbins at the gate going, but there's still a good mix of podcasts out there. So good night, everybody. All the best. Bye-bye now.
God bless. Bye-bye.